suddenly the moment. G'day, mate, how you going? This is Lethal Mullet. Adam O'Brien coming to you live from Quinlan Scan Center in the Gold Coast of Australia for another episode of Guess What? The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Episode number 89, folks. We're heading towards 100 episodes. In 2 years of this show, it's been something I've been passionate about, and really finding films that you either haven't seen or ones that you have that you really enjoy and much more. And tonight's episode is a bit of a celebration of a franchise that has been around for quite a few decades now and has had multiple entries in, whether it's been the film series, a TV show, and in 2016, a remake, a reboot, if you like. And of course, this is, of course, The Magnificent Seven, which itself is a remake of a famous Toshiro Mifune and Akira Kurosawa production. Of course, you know that one as The Seven Samurai. Akira Kurosawa has obviously influenced a number of filmmakers over the years, not only ones in the Western genre, but also in Star Wars and stuff like that too, being something that was a hero's journey style with things like The Hidden Fortress, which in some ways influenced the first Star Wars film and in turn others as well. We're going to go and look at what it is about these heroic stories and, of course, some amazing cast in the original film. But we are actually heading in our main article to look at what I think is my favourite incarnation of it, and that is, of course, the Michael Biehn-led TV show, which came out in about 1998 and ran through to 2000 with two seasons. And it starred also, of course, Ron Perlman, Eric Close, and many others. This is a really good show, folks. This is something that was a lot of fun at a time where Westerns were kind of on the fringe of going into absolute oblivion. No one really found, even in the 80s and 70s even, that Westerns were big anymore. Not until films like Tombstone and, of course, Wyatt Earp, Silverado, really sort of renewed a little bit of a sense of the heroic West. And we'll look at some of those too in the next couple of months here on a show. And with those, Silverado's one that Kevin is going to be doing on his part of the network. We're going to be doing it on Couch Potato Theater, I believe. So that'll be one to look at. We'll all jump on that one. It's going to be huge. A bit like our Batman show a couple of months ago. The other one is, of course, Tombstone, which I'm going to be doing with your pal of mine from, of course, Mando Miller Podcast, the one, the only, Lee Fillingsness, which will be a lot of fun too. And stay tuned if you haven't already seen the episode that's going out as we speak, as we record. So this is in the future now, folks. We just did one on Ronin, which is a lot of fun too. So go and check that out. And the latest Mando Mullet that is out, episode number 3, talks about the basically the martial arts world and how that influenced things like Star Wars and in particular Aikido. And some of the methodology that they use in their system has something to do with very akin to the Force. But before we go into any of that tonight, here's how you can catch this show and many others like it.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, my name's Gowan. Follow the Lethal Mullet here on Fandom Podcast Network's master channel at fpnet.podbean.com or subscribe on the Podbean app, where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. New look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. You can also check out The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Lethal Mullet. You can also check out this show and all the others, like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. Make sure you follow me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Now it's time for the latest action news from the cinema and martial arts movies and more, all here on The Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, folks, you're always asking, what is the coolest stuff to check out? Well, in this new segment, we're going to tell you. Now, everyone jumps on YouTube, and I'm sure there's some great channels that you're subscribing to and enjoying, but I'm going to give you one to check out, one that we've talked about here before, but I want to just show you what you can find on this channel, because we want to get the word out to help our dear pal, one that we all watch the movies of, Scott Atkins, has this amazing channel for anyone that's into action films, how to make them, how to get involved, and just what it means to be an action star or even a martial arts star. So this is called The Art of Action. You can find it on Scott Atkins' channel on YouTube. And there's around about 30 episodes, I think, or 29 at least, so far. The Art of Action covers everything from directors to fight choreographers, famous action stars that you all know, and more. Just to give you an idea, this is just some of the people they've had on the show. They've had director John Himes. Now, you might know John Himes from some of the movies that he's actually done. Of course, like the Universal Soldier sequels that have come out. You've got Iko Uwais from, obviously, The Raid and The Raid 2. And he's also had the original actor from, of course, No Retreat, No Surrender, Kurt McKinney. And some of his stuff is just fantastic too, because you get to hear his stories on there too. We've also had Joe Taslim on there as well, Elaine Moussi. We've also had, of course, some amazing stuff with people like, of course, Steven Seagal on there too. So Dolph Lundgren's been on there as well. Also, who else has been on there too? Obviously, he's worked with Michael Jai White, and I do believe he's done an episode with him as well. So we've also got those. We've got Bobby Holland as well. And, of course, Kane Kasugi. He was in with him in the Ninja 2. So he did the Ninja film, then he did the sequel. And, of course, he was in with that. And a really, really good action film too. Gary Daniels is also in there. And Gary Daniels, still amazing and really out there doing as much martial arts as he can. And you should see him. He looks amazing. You also got, who else? You got Sam Hargrave as well. You also got Andy Chang. The biggest one for me was Jeff Speakman. Jeff Speakman's somebody I've had a lot of time for. As a karate stylist myself, I've never really been one that's seen Kenpo classes, Kenpo karate classes in, you know, Australia itself, even though there's plenty of them. And I've had a lot of respect for what he's done. Obviously, for what Ed Parker created with Kenpo Karate. It's an amazing style. But that was a great sort of eye into also what it was to be an action star back in the day and obviously what happened to him after that and where he went with films. Philip Ree, also from Best of the Best, is on there. And, of course, he's just still out there doing what he does, which is obviously teaching the Korean arts of Taekwondo and Hapkido, I believe, as well. An amazing martial artist, and of course his brother as well, who played Dae Han in that film. So they talk about that, of course. Dolph Lundgren, Benny Ukides, Benny the Jet is in some of that too. And of course Cynthia Rothrock. So this just gives you an idea. And for Aussie fans, and fans, of course, of Fury Road, and more, of course, Richard Norton's on there too. Richard Norton is just one of the really nice guys out there in the world of martial arts, and he's played everything from heroes to villains, and obviously he's working behind the camera too, and it's one of the many people involved in Zendo Kai Karate out here in Australia. Also too, Mark Dacascos is in there as well. Chad Stahelski, obviously from John Wick and the Matrix films, and Daniel Bernhardt, who was in that too. Gareth Evans, the director from The Raid, and the big one, folks, also Lauren Avedon from the sequels of No Retreat, No Surrender, and many others. So that just gives you a little bit of an idea of who's in there. You can also find Tony Jaa in there as well. So this is only the tip of the iceberg. I think we're going to see a lot more from Scott when it comes to his natural, when it comes to interviewing these amazing action stars. And again, because he's in the industry, he's worked with half of them as well. So it's a sort of a camaraderie there on screen. And they are just amazing interviews. I'm glued every week to the YouTube channel. And just wanting to know, you know, how they create some of this magic. You know, I think a lot of it's frowned on by main media and mainstream Hollywood because these are smaller budget films. But I think in the long run, a lot of these films, these amazing people like Scott Atkins and all the people he's interviewing and putting together, they put their bodies on the line for the entertainment that we watch every week. And just by going by some of the interviews, the amount of injuries these guys get from some of the amazing fight work and stunt work is just above and beyond. So we salute you, folks. It's amazing. And we salute Scott Atkins, mate. You're fantastic. Keep it up and keep making amazing films.
Please hang up and try again.
Now it's time for the Lethal Mullet Cafe as we chill back, relax, and look at the trivia. All the detail, the nitty-gritty of the films we are celebrating.
All right, folks, here we go. I'm going to chat a little bit of Westerns here tonight. And as we get into it, I'm going to go into my first encounter with this franchise. And, of course, this amazing story, which has been told a number of times now, of course, coming from the Seven Samurai itself, all the way back in the days, of course, of Akira Kurosawa, through to, of course, 1960, when we got to see the release, of course, of The Magnificent Seven. This retelling, and again, one film that I think holds up. It's a beautiful film. And of course, it's a, you know, it's a, one of those Western fans' fantasies, if you like. You know, it's got all the classic tropes of the Western, the bad guys, the bandits, of course, led by Calvera, played by the enigmatic and amazing character actor Eli Wallach. And of course, then you've got the village being obviously plundered by these guys, and they have to hire Yul Brynner's Chris Adams and his team of other six men come down and save them from the bandits. Classic story, but of course it was done with samurai in the original film, and famous for really pushing out into, of course, outside of Japan, the amazing talents of Toshirô Mifune in one of the amazing character roles in that one too. Now, again, that is a classic, and I've probably seen that more than this film, because this used to play on SBS here in Australia. At least once a year. Was it once every 6 months for 1 year there, where they play that? And I really got into it because at the time, of course, studying martial arts, I was very much into the period pieces from Japan, Hidden Fortress as well, and Yojimbo. Again, Yojimbo is another film that obviously influenced a number of Westerns. One of the classics being, of course, A Fistful of Dollars. And, of course, after that, there was a Western with Bruce Willis, done in set in the Roaring Twenties, I think it was, and that is, of course, with all the gangsters and stuff like that in that village called, of course, Last Man Standing. So instead of 45 peacemakers, they have the 45 Colt M1911 as their main one in that one too, which is interesting. It was a good enough film for what it was, and again, so it's influenced a number of stories. But getting back to Seven Samurai, Shichinin no Samurai, of course, is in the actual Japanese language itself. And it is an amazing flick. Now, moving on to when, of course, the Americans had seen this, and the filmmakers were very much interested in making this into a film. Obviously, producers Walter Mirisch and director, of course, and producer John Sturges wanted to make a film that would take that sort of story and put it into the bandit area of the Western, and they did it extremely well, and it still holds up. I think even by today's standard, it still feels as fresh as it could be. It's a little slow in parts now, in consideration of how things are edited these days, but it still holds up because the character work that's done in it. Obviously, you've got some amazing actors in this one. This is really the start of a lot of careers, obviously, alongside Yul Brynner, who was already a name at the time, Steve McQueen, who pretty much steals all the scenes that him and Yul are in. So when he's in the scene with Chris, the character, he's always fidgeting and carrying on and doing all of these amazing little things to sort of steal the camera, steal the limelight, so the viewers will take in his performance. We had Charles Bronson as well, who to me is kind of like the unsung hero of this film, because we start to see some of the tough guy traits and some of the sort of silent warrior like mannerisms that we'll see later in Death Wish and other films like that too. Robert Vaughn, who would somehow return to this story a number of times, not only here, but in the TV show we're about to talk about soon. He's in about the second or third episode, playing Judge Warren Travis. He's also in, of course, the one they did in space as well, which was obviously, basically taking the idea of what George did and applying another of the Japanese samurai films into that ideal. Obviously, taking The Magnificent Seven and doing it as a space flick. And of course, it's Roger Corman production, Battle Among the Stars, I think it was called, if I remember right. So, all of these, goes back to the fact that we had a core story which was simple, heroic, and again, we love watching those films. We really do. I always have. So the film used to be on Western nights and stuff like that here in Australia. So I think I first saw it in the 80s when I was a kid. And I found it a bit slow at the time. So I was always watched a little bit of it, I'd go away and do something and then come back watch when the action kicked in. But it wasn't until the mid to late 90s when I was on VHS and I was really heavily getting into Westerns again after films like Young Guns, Young Guns 2. I got even to the point of watching Gunsmoke and, you know, all the TV shows around that, Lonesome Dove. But I got the classic out because everyone's always said, my father always said, to check this film out again and give it a chance a few times. But when I watched it again, I saw all the things that I loved about Westerns in there. Everything from the characters, the setting, the action, and of course the desolation of what those hard times were like. It was tough times. But the characters rung true and they always sort of had that real powerful sense of, matter. Now, what I mean by that is that, yeah, things were final back then. You know, you get into a gunfight, stuff like that, and nine times out of ten, you're not walking away. Unless it was the gunfights where it was two drunken people coming out of the saloon and they shoot so close to each other, they still miss because they're so blind, rotten, drunk. But in this one, these guys were exactly that. They were professional gunfighters. And that story is rung through all the different editions of it too. Obviously, in 2016, we had a new version, which came from, of course, the amazing director of Training Day and The Equalizer, Antoine Fuqua, who's done an amazing job. Which, you know, this was updated to a point where it really felt fresh, but still punchy. It was a really fast Western for the time. So Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt, Ethan Hawke. Who else we got this? We got Peter Sarsgaard, Vincent D'Onofrio as well. I mean, there's a lot of people turning up for this. And Byung-Hun Lee as well, of course. And the film is just amazing. I do believe this is one of the latest, before he passed, music scores by James Horner. So, you know, again, the film itself, the original, has such an amazing score. So it's great to have somebody on it that knew that there was a real sense of myth, not just about the series itself, but about the music. It really trapped you into that world. Alrighty, mate, time to go down to the pub for a pint, chat, action movies and more, here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Alrighty, folks, let's talk about the sequels. Now, there was a number of sequels made. One with Yul Brynner, and back at the role of Chris Adams, in Return of the Seven in 1966. Then we had The Guns of the Magnificent Seven in 1969 and The Magnificent Seven Ride in 1972. Now, these were all good in what they were. You know, they all had different leads and different groups to make up the, obviously, the sequels and stuff like that of teams. So, in the second film, Return of the Seven, now, you might find this also called Return of the Magnificent Seven in some of the DVD releases as well. So this film had Robert Fuller, Julian Mateos, Warren Oates, Virgilio Teixeira, Claude Akins, and Eliza Montez, and also Jordan Christopher. Now, this film sort of returned to similar locations, and it had been 6 years since Chico from the original film Road with Chris. And, of course, the band of gunslingers. And it was that time that he married Petra and basically said goodbye to weapons forever. So he said he's giving up that life. But things, unfortunately, turn around when Lorca, played by Emilio Fernandez, begins to take on the village again and basically turn it upside down. And, of course, Chico has to get Chris back and a new bunch of five to join them to take on these bandits. This feels a bigger film in some ways, but also it feels a little bit of a rehash of the original. I think, look, no matter what you do, these films are going to follow the same plot. They are going to still follow that same idea. And it's been obviously copied ever since. You know, so that was that film. Then we also had George Kennedy take over the role of Chris. And he basically came in on the film Guns of the Magnificent Seven. And this film was, I think, quite good. Chris is played by George quite a bit differently. I think it feels like an older version of the character, which no doubt he probably was a little bit older than Yule in the role. And basically he's offered a reward to free a Mexican prisoner, this revolutionary. But he has to do that, get a group behind him. And in this one, George is joined by James Whitmore, Renny Santoni, Franco Silvera, and Bernie Casey. And the film's quite good. I actually probably enjoyed this more than the second film. I think it flows better. It feels like a more fun Western. And George Kennedy's just this huge barrel of energy. He always was in Cool Hand Luke and the other films I'd seen him in. And there's something about him that's a bit more weathered, a bit tougher. And in the role of Chris, I think he's far better than Yule. That's just my opinion on that one too. Later, we got one in 1972 called The Magnificent Seven Ride. This one had the amazing actor, the master, we should say, from the TV show, Lee Van Cleef. And he was joined by Stephanie Powers, Michael Callan, Pedro Armendariz Jr. And this was a film that felt more like a TV Western. But with Lee Van Cleef, he just has this ability to make things rise above and beyond. He certainly did for a few dollars more. And all the other films like Escape from New York and others where he has probably smaller roles, but there's a presence that guy had that just elevates everything to the next level. And again, that was fun for what it was. Obviously, 1980, there's a remake of this called Battle Beyond the Stars, which we talked about earlier. And George Peppard was actually in there, as well as Robert Vaughn, playing exactly the same character he's played. So this character that's had enough of fighting, you know, gunslinger, and he's played in all those roles, except for probably the one he played in, obviously, the TV show as well. And there's been a number of different ways that this has been copied. The Dirty Dozen, in some ways, is kind of similar to it. The A-Team, definitely. And there's even actors from this that were, at one stage, even offered some roles in that too. So it's interesting that sort of comes back in play there, you know. Obviously, Peppard was in Battle Beyond the Stars, so there's sort of kind of a link in some ways there. but also Robert Vaughn, was added in the final season of A-Team. So it's funny, yeah, that sort of comes back around. There's even an anime adaptation, which is actually one of my favourite anime ever made, and that is one called Samurai 7. Now, this is not a Magnificent Seven film, obviously, but it comes from the Kurosawa stuff. And it's a mixture of mecha anime, so big robots and stuff like that, and classic samurai anime. It's tough. It's kind of steampunk. Came out in about 2004, and it really interested me because I was just coming out of graphics design college and coming out with a love of visual communication. That was just an amazing thing to watch. So every couple of weeks, we'd get a new edition out on DVD, and these were absolutely lovely because you get these big booklets with them with all the background to the characters, to the world, and to the animation, the illustrations, the concept art. And then you'd have 2 hours of anime to watch each time it came out. It's 7 volumes in the Samurai 7. So if you're an anime lover, you have to check that out. That stuff's just amazing. All right, folks. So The Magnificent Seven obviously had been something been around for a little while, and there was already talk in the late 90s, around 96, 97, that they were going to reboot this. Make a TV show and one with actors that were obviously from the period. Now, this is led by Michael Biehn, folks. Of course, Kyle Reese from The Terminator, Corporal Dwayne Hicks, of course, of Aliens, and many other films, K2. Yeah, folks, if you haven't seen K2, you really need to, because he's good in that one. And, of course, his sublime and amazing and tough portrayal of a Navy SEAL, one of the many Navy SEALs he's played a few, in, of course, The Abyss as Lieutenant Coffey. He's pretty tough in that. But this is one of the more interesting roles he's taken, and, of course, he plays Chris Larrabee in this one. And, of course, the center of this edition of The Magnificent Seven. Now, this was developed by Penn Dansham and John Wonson for the CBS. And I think the first one came out in about January 3, 1998, running for two full seasons until 2000. And this is really big out here. We had a huge launch here in Australia for it. And I can't remember what channel it was on out here, but there was a lot of promos for it, a lot of talk, and even on the internet at the time. You know, the internet was just kicking up at the time, probably a couple of years here in Australia. There's a lot of banners and stuff like that on websites for The Magnificent Seven on, of course, whatever channel it was out here in Australia. Now, obviously, the production company behind it was Trilogy Entertainment Group, the Mirage Corps, MGM. So MGM obviously owns the rights to it. But it's got an amazing cast, which we'll get through in a sec. Michael Biehn, obviously, Eric Close, Andrew Kovovit. We've got Dale Midkiff, Ron Perlman, folks. There you go, Ron Perlman. Anthony Stark and Rick Worthy. And when you hear just some of the roles these guys have done, obviously later you'll figure out just how, at the time, it's amazing to get this group together. And there's obviously two recurring cast as well, particularly for the village as well. So the main plot is seven men are gunslingers and obviously other lines of work band together to basically form the law in one town. No matter what happens, and they all do it because there's so much outlaw business going on in the West. So obviously one of them's a gunslinger that's infamous and wanted. Another's an ex-bounty hunter. Another one is a womanizing gunman, Dale Midkiff, which we'll get into in a sec. And of course, he has Australian ties, folks. We'll talk about that in a sec. And also Anthony Stark's smooth-talking con artist, which is actually probably my second favourite character. There's a lot of favourite characters in this, folks. We'll get to in a sec too. But yeah, and apart from that, and the pilot episode, which was directed by New Zealander George Murphy, which you may remember, folks, or is it Jeff? Sorry, Jeff Murphy. There you go. Jeff Murphy, obviously New Zealander, known for Young Guns 2. That's right, folks. Hell of a director to have on an episode, isn't it? And of course, he's, you know, well known to Australian shores as well, out here too. First episode, The Ghosts of the Confederacy. It's an amazing pilot episode where we got to meet everybody. And the main part of it is Chris is met by a Seminole man asking for his village to be protected from a band of bandits called the Ghosts of the Confederacy. And again, it follows the same exact sort of story as the film and, of course, all the other incarnations where the people don't have enough money to pay for proper gunslingers and stuff like that, but seven do it out of honour. So Chris, Vin, Buck, Ezra, JD, Josiah and Nathan, all from different parts of the West, go and, for the honour of it, fight the bad guys. So that's just an amazing part of it. So let's get into it. We'll talk about the characters. So Chris Larrabee, which is basically a new version of the Chris character. It used to be called Chris Adams, played by Michael Biehn, and he's basically loosely based on Chris Adams. Has the same look. He's got, you know, obviously the flat Stetson sort of hat. He's got the trench coat, but he's got the classic Yul Brynner attire. And his backstory, his family was killed before the start of the series, and he's become somebody with PTSD. He's not somebody that's has any people skills anymore. He's sort of reserved, keeping everything away because he's got so much pain. And there's something that, as we go on through the series, we hear more of. And, of course, he opens up more and this family of characters joins him. In the second role, we have Eric Close playing Vin Tanner, which is basically based on the Steve McQueen role from the 1960 movie. Carries some different weaponry, which is interesting. And it's a kind of a particular, you don't see it till the second episode, but he has a mare's leg, which is one of those sawn down Winchester lever actions. And the mare's leg is sort of basically stops where the magazine tube starts and obviously where the trigger and handle finish. So it's basically like just a giant pistol version of the Winchester. So it's, again, you know, going back to the McQueen role in Wanted Dead or Alive, we had that as his basically his hand cannon. McQueen's character was called Josh Randall. So he in this one, his version is he's a buffalo hunter. He's a great tracker, can live off the land, all that sort of stuff. And so he's come to the town for some reason, but he gets involved in it too. J.D. Dunn, played by Andrew Kvothe, comes from the East Coast, and he's basically the bumbling idiot of the group. He's just the young guy that's trying to get involved in everything. And we had characters like this in Young Riders and many others where they're kind of still finding their hole, if you like. In some ways, he's the Chico character. One that's still trying to learn, but he's a bit more comedic, and he looks up to Buck, and Buck is pretty much the guy that's, you know, teaching him the ropes. And even though he's kind of like, yeah, but I know what I'm doing, man, you know, it still falls within that line. Buck Wilmington, played by Dale Midkiff, and he's an old friend of Chris, and of course he's the womanizer, blah blah blah, and he's basically more akin to I was trying to think of other roles, but probably Warren Oates from the sequels. But you've seen this sort of character in many Westerns, particularly in the miniseries, of course, Lonesome Dove. I fails to remember the actual character, but there's a womanizing character in that too, very similar. But Dale Midkiff's obviously known for a number of TV shows, one being, of course, Time Tracks, which was filmed out here in Australia, actually literally about two blocks from my house at a place called Warner Brothers Movie World, where next to it they've got the studio there, which is, of course, Roadshow Studios there. And that's been open since the late 80s, and they've been making TV shows, movies. You might know a certain Thor one that was made down there with, of course, Ragnarok as the title. Street Fighter, The Phantom, you name it, it's been made down there. We even saw at one stage down there, I don't know why they had it, but they did. The Memphis Belle, folks. So just some of the things that are around the corner. I don't know why they've got it in Australia. Doesn't make any sense. But Buck's my second favourite character next to Vin Tanner. Now, next one you've got also is Josiah Sanchez, played by Ron Perlman. Now, he's an interesting character in this. Ron's always great, but this one's interesting because he's playing a preacher, but he's also a former mercenary and gunfighter. And again, he's a bit of an amalgamation of some of the characters from the other sequels. So see how this series, you know, has sort of a reverence not only for the original film, but for others. And that's what I love about it, sort of a bit more out there. And particularly, I mean, Ron steals every scene he's in, no matter what movie or TV show he is. In this one, he does it very well. Now, Ezra Standish, amazing character. Now, he's a southern con man and gambler, and he has little bits and pieces of the Jimmy Coburn character, Robert Vaughn character, and others in him. Now, he's got that real sort of strong southern manner, but also obviously accent too, which is amazing. But also he's a real true con artist who kind of, I think, fires his moral founding in this group, particularly number of times where he's tried to hightail it and just leave them stuck in the middle. And it's interesting because you don't get to see him sort of move on. And he's a character that, as you go through, particularly the first, the pilot episode, you get to real sense that he is somebody who's probably more skilled than most of them. But he's also a fast gun. So it's somebody that they can really use. But again, he's a trickster. Those characters are always interesting, and I think Anthony played it extremely well. Nathan Jackson is the next one, and he's played by Rick Worthy. Rick's been an amazing actor. You see in a number of series. Very well known out here for, of course, his run on Battlestar Galactica, the reimagined series where he played a Cylon. I just think he's a fantastic actor. Now, in this, he plays a former slave who was basically a medic, stretcher bearer in the Union Army, where he learned about medicine, stuff like that together. And obviously, by the time you get to this part of the story, he's the one with all the experience when it comes to first aid and medical expertise. So he's amazing. And he's I think, the real heart and soul of the group, because not only is he deadly, still with a knife and gun, he's somebody that knows how to obviously help and really, you know, particularly the time where these guys are getting hurt pretty bad and some of the gunfights, he can patch people up when they need to. And he's just a really, really good actor, always entertaining. We also have Mary Travis, played by Laurie Holden. And does this lady even age, even now? She still looks as good as she did back here. Dana Barron plays Casey Wells, who's love interest to JD. And, of course, we have, I correct myself, his name was Oren Travis, this local circuit judge, and that is, of course, Robert Vaughn. Amazing. We've got many guest stars in this as well, which the show just seems to have an amazing cast here and there too. Now, let's have a look at some of the directors that are involved in this. Now, the names might just ring a bell when it comes to Westerns. Christopher Kane, folks. Yes, the director of course, Young Guns, and the father of Superman. That's right, Dean Kane. Chris comes back also in the second season. He's actually done about, let's have this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six episodes he's done. Greg Champion's another one. Gordon C. Lonsdale and Steve Beers. So quite a few here. The series was filmed in Newhall, California, and the pilot, obviously directed by Young Guns fame Jeff Murphy, was shot in Mescal, Arizona, which I do believe, if I remember right, is the old Tucson. So, and the Dragoon Mountains of Arizona near Tombstone. Amazing. And, of course, it was scripted by Chris Black and Frank Q. Dobbs, the guy who did Streets of Laredo. Amazing. Now, the series itself is fun. It has that sort of Young Guns flavor. I think that's why I like it more than the other editions. It's fast, punchy. And again, it's got a wide assortment of Western characters, which are outside of the archetype. They're different. And I think everybody could sort of get into that and what that sort of means too. But again, you've got some amazing characters who get a chance to grow through the series. I just wish there was more than obviously the one season that we had there. There's opportunity, obviously, for it to grow beyond that. And we just didn't get a chance to do that. And I think that, you know, with more seasons, we would have seen more, particularly for Chris Larrabee and even Vin Tanner to get look at his background as well too.
G'day folks, hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well, hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.